I wanna be a billionaire. I ain't getting no sleep till I see a milli every week. I wanna be a billionaire. I ain't getting no sleep till I see a billy every week. I wanna be a billionaire. Billionaire. I wanna be a billionaire. Ladies and gentlemen, how you doing? Welcome to another episode of Sleepers for Billionaires, the podcast. I am your host, Johnny Vegas. Now today, I got a special guest on my show, ladies and gentlemen. You're in for a treat. This man is a director, a writer, and an editor. Ladies and gentlemen, Michael Ray.
How you doing, King? Good, man. Nice to meet you. Thanks for having me.
Blessings, man. But thank you for coming through. I know we've been in talks to try to schedule this, but we finally made it happen. I'm glad you came here today, brother. You know, there's going to be an interesting conversation because, you know, I'm in the director, writer, editor, film industry myself. So, you know, I feel like we can learn a lot from each other as well as possibly collab in the near future.
Absolutely.
You know, so, you know, basically, again, this show is about getting insider information for those looking to be in your position. You know, especially being in California, there's a lot of inspiring filmmakers, writers, producers, all types of stuff.
Right.
You know, so I basically want you to drop some jewels on them through your timeline and what kept you going, what helped you get to the success that you've achieved. So let's start from the beginning, brother. Where you from?
I'm from the Bronx. We'll talk about that off camera. BX all day.
So where in the Bronx?
Baychester Avenue.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So born, raised in the Bronx. I'm the youngest of three boys. I have two older brothers.
Okay.
My parents are Jamaican immigrants.
Are your brothers in the film industry as well?
No, not at all. No one is in the industry.
It's just you.
Yeah, exactly. But my dad did Con Edison.
Oh my God, Con Edison. Yes. You know how many times they cut my lights off?
Don't blame me. So yeah, he did that. Both my older brothers did that. Right, because they didn't finish college, so they ended up doing that.
Mm-hmm.
My mom and my dad did real estate.
Okay.
Made a lot of money doing that.
Mm.
We moved out of the Bronx to Westchester.
Okay. Big money.
Yeah. So we were out there by Westchester, Mount Vernon, where Denzel's from.
Okay.
Money earning Mount Vernon, as they call
it. Yeah, money earning
Scarsdale, which is like one of the richest areas in America.
Mm-hmm.
And so we took a big leap from not having nothing to having a lot.
Right.
But the problem was, you know, being one of the few black families out there, mm-hmm. you know, it was a struggle to fit in. So as a kid, I had to escape through entertainment. And so I watched a lot of movies, a lot of TV. And
was that difficult for you? Like the whole trying to fit in? Like what was that like? You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, was it like racist out there?
A little bit. I definitely experienced some of that. You know, and so I kind of had to, you know, realize, okay, I'm never going to be the popular kid at school. I'm never going to get all the girls. You know, I wasn't the most athletic even though I tried because I love sports. I'm very competitive in that way. So I watched a lot of movies. I watched a lot of TV. And I'd probably say the two movies that defined my childhood the most were Terminator 2 Judgment Day and GoldenEye, which was Pierce Brosnan's first James Bond movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the N64 game with the multiplayer.
When you said it, I thought about the game.
Yes, that game was iconic. So me and my childhood best friend Kevin would play that game all the time. We'd have friends over. My brothers would play. And that was kind of like my entry into that world. And my father was a big movie buff. He actually named my older brother Omar after his favorite actor, Omar Sharif. And so my dad loved movies, particularly James Bond movies and anything with Denzel.
Right,
so, of course. Yeah, so we would always go to the movies together, and that's kind of where my passion for movies grew. My mom didn't really have it. She would actually fall asleep a lot watching movies. But, you know, my dad takes
me
all
the time. When we in escrow.
Yeah. She did like Robin Williams movies, though.
Rest in peace, Robin Williams.
Yeah, so. But she was more of a comedy guy, but me and dad liked action and stuff. And so we'd watch those types of movies. And that's kind of when it developed. But it didn't really become like a passion until my senior year of high school. When I had this professor, I'll never forget his name, Mr. John D. Palermo.
Okay.
He was my media professor.
Mm.
And we had to direct the music video.
Right.
And so me and my partner, I think his name is Jermaine.
You think his name is
Jermaine? Yeah, I can't remember. It was so long ago.
One of these guys.
Yeah. And so we chose a Dave Matthews Band song called Every Day, where this homeless guy goes around L.A. trying to get people to hug him.
Uh-huh.
And so I would operate camera, and Jermaine would go around the school trying to get girls to give him a hug. And girls would, like, say, get away, whatever. And so we edited
it. Was that staged, or were the girls really like, no, bro, I'm
wrong? No, it was real. They didn't even know what was happening.
Like, I ain't touching you.
Yeah, we wanted real reactions.
Yeah. He ain't getting no love.
No, well, he got one. Yeah. So when we showed it to the class and everyone was laughing at all the right moments and cheering at all the right moments, all of a sudden, you know, this kid who couldn't fit in, couldn't play sports, I suddenly knew what I was good at. And everyone was entertained by what I did. And I'll never forget that feeling that I had. And that's the moment I realized I got to be a filmmaker. I got to be a director.
Yeah.
But you would think in that part of the story, okay, he goes to film school and NYU or something like that, and the rest is history. For whatever reason, I don't know if I just didn't have the confidence, but I just, speaking of going into music, De Palermo had this producer who would work with Big Pun and Diddy and all these people come and speak to us. Mm-hmm. And my best friend at the time, Renee, we loved hip hop. And I decided, you know what, I'm going to be the next Timbaland. I'm going to be the next Swiss Beatz.
Yeah.
And we decided to intern with him over the summer. And then mm-hmm. I fell in love with making beats, making mm-hmm. music. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to be a hip hop producer. And so I went to a college called Mercy College.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a major in music production, which right. I specialized in. And about a year of that, I realized this isn't my passion. This mm-hmm. isn't what I love. And so I dropped out of that. I stayed in school, but I switched to business marketing, but that wasn't my passion either. And I was just like racking my brain, like, what makes me happy? What mm-hmm. do I want to do? And at the time I was dating this girl and my life was just built around her. So I was just like, and I even told her this, you know, when we were going back and forth, like I could be a garbage man. As long as I have you, I'm happy.
Right.
You know? And then lo and behold, we break up, you know? And so here I am stuck wondering, okay, my life was built around this person. She's not here anymore. What do I do? What do I love?
How old were you at this point?
21.
Okay. I was 21. Just became a man. It's became yeah. legal.
Exactly. 2005, 21. I was like maybe halfway through college, 2 years away from graduating, didn't know what I was going to do in my life. And I said, well, what do I love? I love making movies. And so it started off, like at that point, we had so much college loan debt.
Mm.
I couldn't tell my parents now I want to go to film school now.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? So I was like, well, what's the other way?
Mm.
And so Ben Affleck had just did Gone Baby Gone.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, I'll just become a famous actor and then become a director. Like, it's that easy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's not.
It's not. But that was my idea. So I went online, how do you get an agent?
Mm.
Somehow found out about this competition in Florida called Talent Rock.
Okay.
And it was run by Lou Pearlman. You know who Lou Pearlman is?
No.
You know who he was? Okay, so
maybe
he was,
if I see him, I'm better with faces.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He was this big, fat, old, white guy. He put together the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC.
Okay.
Yeah. And so he ran an airline company called Transcontinental Airlines.
Mm.
And he, New Kids on the Block, I think it was, rented his plane. He was like, how can they afford my plane? That's for billionaires.
Yeah.
And he looked into how much money these boy bands were making.
Mm.
And he's like, I got to put my own group together. So he put together the Backstreet, put together NSYNC, O-Town, all these different groups, made all this kind of money, but wasn't paying them. They had to sue him, you know? So anyway, so he put together Talent Rock, which was for actors, models, singing, whatever you want to do. I actually met him, shook his hand.
Mm-hmm.
And so I auditioned and I got a $10,000 scholarship to an acting school in New York.
Congrats.
Thank you. So I went out there, it was a 2-year conservatory. And obviously in the back of my head, I'm like, I'm not really here to be an actor, I'm here to direct.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't really take it as serious. I was partying, having a good time, renting cameras. I shot a little short film while I was there.
Yeah.
And I was just trying to get comfortable with the camera. I was not comfortable in front of the camera.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think I have talent as an actor, but I just don't like the way I looked on camera. And I just, you know, I'm kind of a control freak, so I like to tell other people what to do instead of having someone tell me what to do.
Yeah.
And so I would clash a lot with the teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to a big clash with the teacher to where I was like, I don't want you to teach me. Her husband was also a teacher at that school.
Mm.
I said, I want your husband to teach me next semester. Because at the end of the first semester, you can pick, do you want to stay in your group or do you want to switch? So I switched. And so I did there 1 year and then I left. And do you remember Hot Topic, the clothing store?
Yep.
Where all the heavy metal people.
Yeah,
so I used to work.
Still there.
Yeah,
still
yeah,
alive, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, so I was like the one black guy there. I had no tattoos at the time. I have one now.
Yeah.
And so every Thursday, unsigned bands would come through. And I'd be like, yo, can I do a music video for you guys or something? $100 or free, whatever. And so I did that for a year.
Mm.
I put it on MySpace, which tells you how long ago this was.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And then this company in Miami called BMAC Films discovers me. They're like, yo, you're really talented, man. You should come down here if you're ever in Florida, and we'd love to work with you. You know, they're working with T-Pain. They're working with Flo Rida, like big name artists,
yeah.
and some other artists too. And just so and behold, my parents were selling the Bronx house, purchasing a home in Florida.
Mm.
I didn't want to move with them at first because I'm like, New York is where the industry is at.
Right, right, right.
I'm going to do it in Florida.
Right,
and then the BMAC opportunity comes about. So I was like, guys, like literally the day before, I'm moving down with you.
Mm.
And crazily enough, their house was like 20 minutes away from the studio.
Wow.
How crazy is that? So
it's God, man.
Exactly, man. It's God working in mysterious ways. And so there's a plan for me. And so I moved down there and I worked with them for a couple months. And then I was dating this girl who's like, I miss you, I want to see you for Valentine's. So I come back to New York to see her for February and Valentine's. And then I get a call from Eddie Forbes was the guy at the time. He said, BMAC, we're going bankrupt. We made some bad investments.
Ah.
We're disbanding the company.
Damn.
So this is February of 2011, right? I'm in my brother's side room in Harlem.
Yeah.
On a fold-out bed with no future, no nothing, no
right.
plan, no money. I'm just, that was like my most rock bottom moment, really, of my life.
Yeah.
You know, in this big empty room, I had nothing. I didn't know what the next step was. And so I had to really look at myself in the mirror and go, how bad do I really want this?
Right.
Am I going to quit?
No.
Or am I going to keep going?
You better keep going.
Got to keep going. Mm-hmm. So what I did was, you know, the path wasn't clear, but that's how you got to trust in God.
Right.
So I just started getting regular jobs, and then I found out, I started working in Central Park, selling bikes, renting bikes to tourists.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Met these Croatian girls, and they're like, you got to come out drinking with us. And I'm not a big drinker, so I'd always say no. But then one day I was like, you know, let me just go and hang and have some drink with them. And I told them what I do. And they're like, yo, we know a guy who's in the business. Some guy named Matthew Schroeder. He's like a DP. He's worked in commercials. And I was like, commercials? That's what I want to do.
Yeah.
You know, I just finished reading this book by Thomas Richter, who's a TV commercial director, called The 30-Second Storyteller.
Yeah. The
commercial is basically a 30-second story.
Mm.
And I was like, I got to get into commercials. All my favorite directors, Ridley Scott, Tony Scott, Michael Bay, David Fincher, Joseph Kahn, Joe Kaczynski, you know, all these guys started off in TV commercials.
Yeah.
You know, and that was like, I wanted to have a career like them, to where I'm known in commercials, I'm known in music videos, and then I pop in Hollywood. That was the plan.
Right.
And so I met with Matt, and he was a really cool guy.
Mm.
And he got me an opportunity with this lady called Jocelyn Schwartz. She's not in the business anymore. She got married, moved to Ohio or something. But she was working with Radical Media, and they do big commercials. And so she got me a PA job.
Yeah.
Working on, my first job was for Hyundai.
Okay.
A car commercial that ended up airing on Monday Night Football.
Mm.
Right? But it was the craziest shoot I've ever been a part of. First of all, huge crew.
Right.
Like 200 people. I felt like I was shooting a Transformers.
It'd be like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was in the middle of a snowstorm.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone was freezing cold. There were heaters everywhere. We had to make sure the heaters had batteries.
Mm-hmm.
My job was to put batteries in the walkie-talkies. They were freezing up.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone was freezing. It was snowing cold. We had a helicopter. That was like our A camera.
Yeah.
We had the Porsche can. Camera vehicle was our B camera.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Big famous German director. I was bugging him with questions. You know, you know me, just always picking people's brains. And trying to get where he's at. And it was a crazy all-night shoot, all-night experience. Got home at like 7 in the morning. I made like maybe $800.
Okay.
And it was like the best night of my life. I was like, this is where I want to be. This is what I want to do.
Right.
You know? And but she was my one contact there, and she ended up leaving the business.
Yeah.
And so that was my only opportunity with them. And so back to square one again. And so I started directing these music videos, continued to do that. My mom, of all people, called me up. They're down in Florida. And she's like, we met this reggae artist at a wedding, and she needs a video.
Yeah.
So I flew down to direct the video for her.
Mm.
And she was like, I was just telling her what I want to do. And I was like, I want to be a filmmaker, you know. And she was like, I'm going to put you on the phone with somebody.
Okay.
So when she first came to America from Jamaica, she moved to Philly.
Mm.
And she somehow was living in a house with Will Smith and his cousin, a guy named Kenny Snyder.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
And so Kenny Snyder was, at that point, this was like, I think, 2012. He was one of the writers of Universal Pictures.
Okay.
And so she put me on the phone with him. And I showed him my music video reel. He was like, Mike, that's cool and all, but I want to see you make a film.
Mm.
And we could shop it around Hollywood. Maybe I could do something for you.
Mm.
Now, the big mistake I did was I never got his phone number.
Oh, snap.
I just had, she just put me on the phone with him, but she never gave me his phone number.
Right.
So we ended up losing contact with her. She went overseas somewhere, like went to perform for De Beers Diamond Company.
Okay.
And they licensed her, so she's just doing boat tours and yacht tours, and she never came back to the States. So we lost contact with her.
Mm.
And so I couldn't get Kenny's actual number. But anyway, the important thing is it inspired me to make my movie, my first feature film. So I went back to New York in May of 2012, my 28th birthday. And I started working at the steakhouse. I met this girl named Maggie. She was like, I can help you put this project together. She taught me how to write a screenplay. I just wrote scene one paragraph, scene two paragraph.
Yeah,
thinking, that's a script.
Yeah.
That's not a script. She was like, Mike, we can't show this to actors. This is terrible.
Yeah, exactly.
So she gave me final draft. I put it on my computer. I learned how to write an actual professional screenplay. And so I did that. We got the actors. She helped me put the project together. She helped me get a bunch of locations. And we shot a feature film in 8 days.
Wow.
Yeah. I found the DP online. He couldn't shoot the first day because he was also a soldier. He was deployed. And so I had my camera rental place where I always rented cameras. Everybody that works as a DP anyway. So he shot my first day.
Yeah.
And then once the actual DP came back from military, he shot the rest of the film. And so we shot the film in 8 days, and I had to make the schedule myself. I financed the film myself. Speaking of financing, $5,000 all from me. And I had to make the shoot schedule myself. People weren't being paid enough to quit their day job. So I had to schedule people's shoot days around their
schedule.
Work. It was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I remember one really cold, windy day in September, October. I'm out there doing my shot list at the location.
Yeah.
And people are looking at me like I'm crazy because this was like Manhattan business people on their lunch break.
Mm-hmm.
And just I had this feeling inside like one day these types of sacrifices are all going to be worth it.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so we shot the film. And the following May, we kind of had like a little screening at a movie theater at a film school that a friend of mine had. And we invited, my mom invited this lady who my godmother knows or something, who worked in PR.
Yeah.
She's like, Mike, I saw the film, you're really talented, what are you doing next? I was like, well, I don't know. You know? And so she was like, well, let me give you some advice. Low budget horror films are the next way to go. That's how, you know, that's the best way to make your next film. And so I was watching this thing on TV about abortion and what the effects are to women after they get an abortion.
Right.
And so I was like, okay, so I wrote this script called The Unwanted.
Mm.
And that script garnered a lot of attention from investors and different people. And so I put the cast together. We were going to film it in Florida because of the tax breaks. And so I went down there, stayed with my parents, and I did all the location scouting. I went on IMDb and I found the phone numbers of all these different actors, contacted their agents.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know who Andie MacDowell is, very famous actor.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, and so she was going to be in it. She was going to play the mother of the main girl, who was her daughter in real life anyway,
right.
Who's now a singer now. It's actually her younger daughter who I didn't even know they had a second daughter. She's popping off now. She was just in a Tarantino movie.
Mm-hmm.
She just did a movie with Russell Crowe. So the younger sister's actually popping off. The older sister who I was going to put in the film, she's actually a singer now. Really good too. And so they were going to be in the film. Eric Roberts was Julia Roberts' brother. He was the villain in The Dark Knight and the first Expendables. He was going to be her therapist.
Yeah, I remember him from Best of the Best.
Yes.
Remember that?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, throwback.
Yeah, he's an Oscar-nominated actor.
Mm-hmm.
His agent, Peter, very cool guy. You know, we were going to put him in the film. And I was like, man, this is crazy. This is really coming together.
Yeah.
And then I had a producer. So I was with, at that point, I got with the production company in New York called the Black and Latino Film Coalition, BLFC.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all about getting more diversity in front of the camera and behind the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And so they, my producer there, shout out to Tunde Odesanya, he's really like a savior for me. He's my producer, my producing partner. He helps me get all my projects. And we actually have a distribution deal now with Amazon Prime.
Nice.
Right. And so, but we didn't have that then. So we were struggling to find an avenue, take it to film festivals, get investors, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we finally got an investor out in Australia. We had two, one out in Australia and then another in Vegas. And at the last second, they backed out.
Ah.
Like literally a month before shooting.
Damn.
And it was just a heartbreak for everybody involved. And, you know, everybody, you know, I couldn't hold the cast, couldn't hold the crew. People had to move on to other projects.
Right.
And so it was very frustrating. And again, another rock bottom kind of moment.
Mm-hmm.
Big setback. And so what do I do? And so I decided, screw it. I'm going to move to LA.
Mm.
This is 2015.
Okay.
And so I stayed out here for a summer. I had actually an opportunity to work with Riveting Entertainment, which is Chris Brown's music video company.
Andrew Listerman. Shout out to Andrew.
Yeah, shout out to Andrew. I know Andrew. Mm-hmm. I met him. Mm-hmm. And so I got to meet, I don't know if you know, Mike Ho. He's one of their big directors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's you know, he's just did some Jamie Foxx, I think.
Yeah.
And he works with a lot of reggaeton artists.
Got it.
Bad Bunny and guys like that. So he's blown up as a director now. He's nominated for awards and stuff. So I got to shake his hand. I got to meet him. I got to tour the office. And so I was here for a summer. And then my business partner, Ray, and his wife, they have a clothing company.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, we need some commercials for the clothing company. So I came back to New York to shoot those commercials for them. So that's what brought me back to New York.
Yeah.
So this is late 2015. And then, let me see. And then so 2016, 2017, I'm working on other scripts, helping them with commercials. And then 2017, I got the opportunity that kind of changed everything.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy named Eddie out in New Jersey reached out to me through Craigslist, of all places, you know, because the presidential election had just happened. And Trump got elected. And, you know, he was like, he had a lot of things to say about that, but he didn't know anything about cameras or filmmaking. And he was like, I need you to do a documentary for me about the election.
Yeah.
And how this guy got elected. And, you know, I'm a very political person, so I'm passionate about that topic anyway. So I was like, let's do it.
He
didn't have money to pay me.
Right.
Most people are like, yo, where's the money at? There's no bread. I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
I was like, this is an opportunity to work.
Mm.
And I want to, I'm interested in subject matter anyway.
Right.
And at that point, we had the distribution deal with Amazon. So I could tell them we can put this somewhere.
Got it.
And so we started compiling footage. And I did so much research. And I started watching all the debates. And I was just editing it down. And at first it was a feature length. And then we were like, okay, it probably worked better as a short film. So we could submit it to more people. And Amazon was only looking for shorts at that time from unproven filmmakers.
Right.
Right. So We cut down to 15 minutes, which was difficult, like an hour and a half. So we cut down to the main 15 minutes, and it's called Trump for the People. Because that's what he said, I'm Trump for the people.
Yeah.
Right? And so it's mainly about how did this real estate guy, reality TV star, con America into thinking, I'm better than all these other politicians. And it started with him saying, I'm rich. I'm an independent billionaire. I'm not going to take lobbyist money. You can't trust anything these politicians say. They're in the lobbyist pockets, which partially is a lot true. And that's how he was able to get the trust of the people.
Right.
And then that's how he was able to rile people up. And then all of a sudden, all the racist rhetoric starts, right? All the Mexican stuff, everything. And that starts rallying the base.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, we got Hillary as the Democratic ticket. And she's someone who's very divisive. A lot of people weren't vibing with her. So she didn't have the support she needed.
Right.
And ultimately, he wins.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see the fallout. And then it ends with him giving his inaugural speech, basically saying, God bless America. Right? And then I intercut that repeating with all the shootings, all the horrible things that are happening. And it's like, it's not very looking very blessed right now.
Right?
And so we finished that. And we sent it to Amazon like we love it. They put it on and it becomes one of their biggest hits.
Wow.
And so this is the end of 2017, early 2018. We go to the BLFC Awards. It wins, you know, Best Documentary Short. All that.
Congrats.
And so I'm doing all these interviews and it's finally starting to, you know, happen for me. And then all of a sudden Jeff Bezos, who runs Amazon, he's like, I don't want anything to do with Trump. And so everything that has his name on it gets pulled.
Yeah.
All the documentaries, everything. People are hitting me up like, yo, Mike, I want to see the documentary. I'm subscribed to the streaming service. I'm on there. I don't see it. So I'm looking. I don't see it. And so I hit up Tunde, my producing partner. I'm like, yo, what's going on? He's like, yo, man, they cracking down on everything with Trump.
Wow.
Jeff Bezos wilding out.
Yeah.
And so I was like, what is going on? So it gets pulled. But it was a great experience. And it got me some exposure.
Congrats, man.
Thank you. Yeah. And so people were liking it. And it showed people that, you know, I can do something different. Because I never really saw myself as a documentary filmmaker.
Yeah, but that was an interesting topic. So it's good that you chose to do a documentary on Trump, being that, you know, it was a big thing. With if he even got elected, people were just like, whoa, what is this guy doing? He's coming from business to TV. I think he wants to be president. That whole, there's a documentary just on people's thought alone about that. So with that being said, on the topic of politics, you know, who you are going for now, you know, do you want Trump to continue reigning?
No.
So who are you going for? You're Joe Biden, you going for that female? I forgot her name.
Honestly, I'm a big Yang Gang guy.
Okay.
I don't know if you know about Andrew Yang, but he's the Asian guy. And he wants to give people $1,000 a month, universal basic income, which Alaska already does, based off their oil money that they have. And he wants to take the money from value-added tax, but also the tech companies. Because they're going to take over once the machines take over. Because if you look at the malls and retail service, McDonald's, truck driving, all those industries are going to go away. It's going to be replaced by automation.
Right. They're already doing it with trucks. The kiosks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Self-driving trucks, all this stuff. And the companies are, like Amazon, Apple, they're already betting on it. They're already preparing the technology. They're the ones that are going to benefit. So he's going to tax them. And the same way we do with Alaska with the oil, that's where the money's going to come from. And he wants to give every American citizen who's 18 and above $1,000 a month. And that I like the sound of that.
That does sound good. But do you honestly think, you know, Americans will back a non-American to be president?
Well, he's American, but he's Asian. Yeah,
well,
and he's,
well, that's what I mean.
Yeah,
you know,
and that so far seems to be his biggest hurdle is the fact that he's Asian.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that I'm not saying I'd pick him to win, but that's my favorite as far as his policies. As far as winning, I'm also looking at Kamala Harris.
Okay.
She has a passion and a conviction.
Is that, I know there's a white woman and a black woman.
Yeah, the white woman's Elizabeth Warren.
Okay.
Yeah, I like her too.
Okay.
I like Elizabeth
Warren. Yeah, I like her too.
Yeah, she's the older white lady, and then Kamala Harris is the black one.
Yeah.
Well, she's mixed, but she's very woke on the issues.
Yeah.
She's very passionate when she speaks. She's fiery. She comes from a legal background. She's
a
prosecutor.
Yeah, she just grilled somebody. There was like they were in front of the Senate, and I forgot. There was some guy there that they just had, and you know how when the Senate sits around, they just grill you out.
Yeah.
It was some guy, some fat white guy with glasses. They all probably look like that.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But yeah, she grilled the hell out of him. But
she
I like the way she handled herself, you know what I'm saying?
Man.
Definitely, like, she had a sack under there.
Yeah.
You know, like that.
So my dream ticket would be her and Yang.
Okay.
Paris Yang, yeah.
Okay, that's what's up. So tell me, so up to this point, you know, I'm sure there's more to go beyond that point, but I wanted to ask some questions, you know, because you kind of just took over
the
whole show.
Yeah, you said that's good. Story, so.
No, but that's good because, you know what I'm saying, like, you gave the story in a lot of detail in between, which covered a lot of questions I would have asked in between, you know, but tell me, what, from that point, you know, up to them pulling the Donald Trump and before that, what have you learned from that journey?
Never give up. You know, I always tell people, you know, this, it's like when you try to drown someone, right? We have to breathe. We need oxygen, right? If you didn't need oxygen, you would just give up because it's difficult to stay above water. But you have to breathe. So you're going to fight, you're going to fight, you're going to fight. If you don't love this, if filmmaking or singing, whatever your passion is, if it's not your passion, if it's not your life's blood, if you're not going to commit suicide if you don't make it, then you need to pick another business. Because this industry is going to kick your ass. Multiple times,
right?
If there's a 700 doors in a building, you got to be prepared to knock on every single door until your knuckles bleed. You know what I'm saying? If you give up at the 10th door, you don't want it bad enough.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And I also tell people, obsession beats hard work every time.
Right.
And if people ask me, what's one word to describe yourself, I would say obsessive. Because when I want something, I go after it 200%.
Got it.
And I always tell people, you know, there are people in this industry who give 200% and they'll make it. What makes you think, what makes you think you can get 50% and make it? And I know a lot of people who get 50% think they're going to make it.
Right.
And I'm like, you're not going anywhere, bro.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
It's just this honest truth, man. But people got to realize that you're either 100% in or it's nothing.
Exactly.
You know, you get out what you put in. So if you're doing half-assed, what you expect.
Exactly.
You know, can't expect to win. I hear that, man. So so continue, man. So they pulled the Amazon. Now you're like, oh, my God, what the F? And, you know, that was 2017?
Yeah.
Okay.
2018.
Last year. Okay. Last year. So from then to this point, you know, what took place then?
Well, a couple of things. I kind of got, not sidetracked, but I developed a new passion that I didn't realize I had. Which was fashion.
Interesting.
And so going back
to... continue.
Yeah, going back to Ray Gracie,
okay.
Who I met back in, just going back to 2013 now, just directing music videos, I met an artist, I met a girl on Facebook, she was like, I need you to do two videos for me, and then I met up with her, and she was like, you need to meet the producer of the song, and the guy who wrote the song, because he has a vision for the video, and he raps the last verse, so he's going to be in it anyway, so meet up with him. So that's how I met him.
Right.
So Ray Gracie is a former boxer, bodybuilder, and he's also a Grammy-winning songwriter and producer. He's worked with Drake, he's worked with Alicia Keys, Florence and the Machine. Everybody, and he has houses and studios everywhere. But he's also involved in fashion, mainly through his wife, who has her own fashion company, and she helps celebrities start their own clothing line. So they're working with Ellen DeGeneres, they're working with Samuel L. Jackson, they're working with a bunch of people. And so I met up with him through that video. Me and him just became friends throughout the years. And like I said, after things didn't work out with Riveting, I came back to New York to direct commercials for some of their other companies. And then when his wife was starting this company, originally called the Fashionados, now it's called Purple. They're like, do you have any ideas? And so I started thinking, this was after the Trump thing got pulled and I'm trying to find different avenues. And I was like, you know, I don't know if fashion's really my world, but the more I start to think about it, I was like, I could really do something with this.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I've worked with models and who doesn't love working with models,
right?
And I do love clothes. You know, I'm a big Zodiac person. I don't know about you. What's your sign?
Leo.
Okay, I'm a Taurus.
There you go.
Yeah, and Tauruses, we love... you know, beautiful things and beautiful people, and we're very sensual people, and we love fashion. We love clothes. We love to look nice. Nice cars. I'm obsessed with cars. I'm a big car guy.
There you go.
And so, I guess it's in my blood. And so, they were like, "Do you have any ideas for a clothing line?" And the more I thought about it, I was like, "Okay, I'm gonna do a clothing line for women. Right? We're gonna focus on two things. We're gonna focus on lingerie, and we're gonna focus on fitness because that's big on IG. You know, everyone's lifting weights and yoga pants and stuff. And I came up with a really cool idea for fitness clothes and for yoga pants specifically that I was shocked no one else had ever come up with. I'm not gonna reveal it on camera because I think it's a $1 million idea. But we're developing it now in China. We have some factories out there. We have some investors lined up out there, and we're testing out the technology now. And if it's successful, we could keep it. We could maybe sell it to Lululemon or something. But the bottom line is, I'm passionate about fashion and clothes and that industry. I love that world. And you see someone like Tom Ford, who's obviously a legend in the fashion world, but he's also a filmmaker, directed two feature films. And so I kind of looked at him as a model. Like, if he could do it, why can't Michael Ray do it?
Right.
You know what I mean? And so he's kind of like an inspiration in that sense to mix fashion with the film. Even though I think I'm going to be the opposite of him, I'm going to be more known for film and then dabble in the fashion. Kind of like what Kanye was trying to do.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And so we came up with the name. we have the idea and we're developing the technology now. And as you were talking about before off camera about financing projects, if it's successful, I could use that money to finance the films I want to make.
There you go.
I have a lot of films that I want to make that aren't going to be the type of film that studios easily want to fund. You know what I mean? Darker stories or just, you know, stories that aren't, you know, the typical
they comic book. Appeal to the masses, so to speak.
Exactly. But if you have the money already, all you need is the distribution angle. And like I said, you have Netflix now. You have the distribution deal with Amazon. And so I'm going to try. So we're, that's what happened in 2018, 2019. I started focusing on that, the fashion. And then that's going now. And then I wrote another feature film called Tough Enough, which is a movie about an actress who gets attacked by a stalker and decides to become a UFC fighter after she falls in love with self-defense and kickboxing and stuff. And so we're trying to work on the financing for that now.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah, and that's going to be my hopefully my next film.
Well, congrats on that, man. I hope that works out for you. Anything I could do to help with that new project, let me know, man. If you need an actor or whatever, I could play the stalker. I don't care. I get over here, bitch. You know, something like that. You know, but that's cool, man. No, I'm glad you're taking the entrepreneurial steps, you know, because even when I came out here, it broadened my horizon just to fall into things that I never even thought I was going to get into. Like I told you, I came out here to do music, started acting, opened up a podcast, started hosting a music video show, you know, got into finance, you know what I'm saying? I go to GD, you know what I'm saying? So I didn't expect to do any of that, but that's good. Yeah, LA has a tendency to, you know, broaden your horizon, so to speak. You know what I'm saying? So, so tell me, what do you see yourself in the next 5 years?
Next 5 years. Well, it's always important to have a five-year plan. Well, the next 5 years, I want to get repped by a commercial production company. That's the main reason why I came out here to LA. I have some connections out here. Shout out to Jordan Brady, one of the top TV commercial directors out there. He's been serving as like a mentor for me for the past 6 months or so. And I'm trying to get repped by a big time commercial production company so I can direct big time commercials, car commercials, all that stuff, and then use that in between my feature films. Like I said before, you know, I started off as a PA, you know, and I've been obsessed with this world ever since, really since I was a kid.
Right.
You know, growing up watching football on Sundays and you see all the car commercials, and it's a really an art form to tell a story in 30 seconds and sell a product without making it obvious you're trying to sell a product.
Right.
And a lot of my favorite filmmakers, like I said, Bay, Ridley and Tony Scott, Fincher, Zack Snyder, they all start off in commercials. And, you know, I want to kind of model myself after them. And not only is that my goal to direct commercials, but to make Tough Enough, make my next film after that, because I have a bunch of films I want to make. I have a horror film called As Far As I Can See that I want to make. I have a Western called Rest in Pieces that I want to make. I have a couple sci-fi joints, one that's kind of in like Interstellar called Infinity and Beyond. You know, another one called Objective Amnesia. It's kind of like Blade Runner kind of. Or Minority Report with Tom Cruise. I don't know if you saw that. And a bunch of other ones. And I want to make those films, but you got to go the film festival route. You got to get discovered and then doing commercials in the meantime to make money and also help finance those films. Hopefully the clothing line will pop off and that can also help finance things. And, in general, as you know, African-American filmmaker, I kind of want to change the narrative as to what types of films we're expected to make. You know, you see a lot of directors out there
typecasting,
making the hood movie, making the corrupt cop movie, making the slavery movie, the civil rights movie. And those are important stories to tell, but we could tell other types of stories. And I didn't grow up in the hood, as I told you. So that's not even my personal experience. That's not my story. I have other stories that I can tell that are personal, just that I see in the world. And so I kind of want to change what black directors are known for. And with this recent movement happening in Hollywood right now, with more black directors, more female directors, just more directors of diversity in general, we're seeing different types of stories. And I think that's really important. I just want to change the narrative. And I want to also change the way movies are shot. You know, I have a very unique visual style. You know, if you've ever seen Tony Scott's Domino, which is like my favorite movie of all time, a lot of my style comes from that movie. And also, there's a Hype Williams video for Kanye and Chris Martin called Homecoming. I borrow a lot of style from that as well. I'm also a big fan of Nicholas Refn. And as I mentioned, Tom Ford, Denis Villeneuve, David Fincher. So I kind of take what little bits and pieces from all my favorite directors, Ridley Scott, Michael Bay, and I just kind of compile it all into what the Michael Ray style is. People see my work and you know instantly it's a Michael Ray film. And that's what I want. I want people to know, watching one scene, you know who directed it. Because that's what my favorite directors do. You watch one scene and you know who directed it. And I want to have a very distinct visual style that people know and remember, you know. And I'm, like I said before about sports, I'm very competitive.
Right.
You know, I want to win at everything that I do, and I want to be the best at everything that mm-hmm. I do. And, you know, my favorite athletes are Peyton Manning and Kobe Bryant, mm-hmm. you know, and they're known for their obsessive work ethic,
right.
how hard they push themselves, mm-hmm. how they treat their body, how hard they prepare. And for me, it's kind of similar. So for me, anything where they give a trophy at the end of the year saying who the best is, mm-hmm. to me, that's a sport.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Whether it's the NBA with the Larry O'Brien trophy, hockey, Stanley Cup, Super Bowl trophy, you know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Lombardi, Hollywood has the Oscars.
Right.
And so, and we still haven't had a black director win best director yet, which is crazy. You know, how long has Hollywood been around? So it'd be nice to be the first to win that.
Yeah.
And not only that, but just winning multiple Oscars and to be seen as one of the best to ever do it.
Mm.
I think there's no shame in saying that's one of my goals.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, everybody got to have a dream. And you're right, man. I thought Spike Lee won.
He won for a screenplay for Black Klansman.
Yes. Because I seen that. I was like, it was big. Yeah. Everybody was praising him for it.
He was one of the three writers. That was his first win, other than the honorary one they gave him a couple years ago for like his career. But that was like his first actual win. It was about time.
What actor would you want to work with in regards, like, in your film? Like, in your film, your baby, like, what is your dream actor you want to play the lead in your film?
I mean, there's obviously so many different actors you could pick. But to me...
Top five.
Okay. Mm-hmm. For me, Shia LaBeouf.
Okay.
I'm a big Shia LaBeouf fan. I mean, I've always been a fan, but when I saw him in Fury, the David Ayer tank film with mm-hmm. Brad Pitt,
mm-hmm.
where he actually had someone, like a dentist, pull out one of his front bottom teeth because he wanted the character to have missing teeth. He really took out the tooth.
Right.
And he eventually had it replaced. He cut his own face. Like, he went super method.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's just like a chameleon. And he has a new movie coming out where he plays his own father called Honey Boy.
Mm-hmm.
Totally transformed. So Shia LaBeouf was one.
He's actually a good rapper too.
Yeah, he's an amazing rapper. Yeah, he's a hip hop head.
Yeah.
Yeah, he can spit. Mm-hmm. And so Shia, Denzel, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's like the legend.
Yeah.
Tilda Swinton. I don't know if you know about Tilda Swinton. She's like a female Gary Oldman. She plays men. She's a chameleon. She does accents.
Yeah.
She was in Snowpiercer. She's been in all kinds of movies.
Mm-hmm. I gotta see her face.
Yeah. You probably wouldn't recognize her if you saw her face. Because in movies, she doesn't look like herself.
Ah.
So she's an absolute chameleon. I love Tilda Swinton. Shailene Woodley.
Okay.
She's really, really good. She's in the Divergent movies. But when she does her indie films, like, she really, really dives in. She was in that Oliver Stone one with Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Mm-hmm.
Snowden, about that.
I like that.
Yeah, yeah. And he's another favorite of mine, Oliver.
Mm-hmm.
So those actors, Sean Penn.
Yeah.
You know, when I told you about the breakup I had in college
mm-hmm.
and how I had to refine, you know, figure out who I wanted to be,
mm-hmm.
and I decided to go to acting school,
mm-hmm.
and I decided I was going to be the next Ben Affleck and become an actor turned director.
Yeah.
I just started buying all these DVDs I could of every Sean Penn movie and every Gary Oldman movie.
Because
mm-hmm. growing up, like I told you, it was GoldenEye, it was Terminator, it was mm-hmm. Matrix, it was mm-hmm. Star Wars. Mm-hmm. Every boy, you want action, adventure, Indiana Jones. But then as I got older, I was like, okay, let me start watching more dramas mm-hmm. and start watching how actors really craft a performance.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started renting and buying every Gary Oldman movie I could find, every Sean Penn movie I could find.
Mm-hmm.
And then I found out they did a movie together called State of Grace.
Yeah.
And I was like, yo, this is like my prized possession.
Yeah.
And I watched that every day. And so Sean Penn, Gary Oldman's another one.
Mm-hmm.
Viola Davis, she was powerful.
Yes, the queen.
Yes. So many. I mean,
nah, definitely. That's a good list right there. No, actually, it's crazy because I utilize that same formula as well. So I watch a lot of TV, but I don't just watch TV to watch TV. Like, I use it to study my craft. Like,
yes.
I'm looking at the timing between cuts and edits. You know, I'm looking at the color correction. I'm looking at the way the script was written, how the actors are delivering the lines. You know what I'm saying? Because... you know, and even if it's like a small line, you know, how big can the actor deliver? Because there's no such thing as small roles,
right?
Small actors,
right.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you know, I watch it for all those reasons, you know. So when you mentioned that you kind of, you know, you got that film and you was like studying your craft, you know, I felt that because I do that to this day.
Yeah.
You know, I'm always looking for the next new series. And, you know, since series are big, I write screenplays as well. But I want to get into the habit of, like, I have a feature film, like My Baby, I've been working on, you know. But I started it as a feature film, but I want to put it into a series format.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So I'm watching a lot of series just to see, like, the timing and how many pages it would be to accumulate one episode for a series,
right.
You know, and stuff like that. So, yeah, man, I utilize those resources as like a study guide,
yes.
so to speak, instead of just watching it for no purpose. Right. You know what I'm saying? So I'm glad you did that. You do that as well.
Yeah. I, when I watch a film, I'm always analyzing the angles, the cinematography, the lighting. Oh, who shot this? Who's the DP? Mm-hmm. I like the way, oh, the music was loud here, and then it quiets down here. You look at the different cuts. Okay, you're cutting on the actor when they're talking, or just when they're not talking, just get the reaction shot. Like, there's a science to it. You know, like when I ask someone, so what'd you think of the movie? And they're like, oh, it's cool. I'm like, okay, that's not a movie person.
Then there's
other people who are like, oh, what'd you think of the movie? And like, oh, well, you know, I thought the humor didn't really work. Third act was really good. First part was a little slow. I thought the visual effects in that scene was a little wonky, you know, and then they're breaking it down. And I'm like, oh, that line seemed a little false, but this actor's performance, they were really good. They might get nominated. That's the person who's analyzing the film. Those are the types of conversations I like to have.
Same here, man. What's the latest movie you saw?
Latest movie I saw... probably, I haven't been watching that movie since I got out here, so it would be the flight out here when I moved out here on August 19th.
Not even to the theater or nothing?
The last time I went to the theater, man, it's been a minute. Let me see, 2019. I didn't think I've been to the movie in 2019. 2018, I'd say the last movie I saw was on the plane was Us. Jordan Peele.
Jordan Peele, what do you think about his directing?
He's a genius, man. He's like, to me, he's like a mixture of like Spike Lee and M. Night Shyamalan. Like, you have the race issues, but then you have the horror, you have the plot twists. And he's like a genius the way he puts his plots together, and you have to follow the breadcrumbs to the end, and then you got to watch it again to see if you missed the clues. Like, I loved Get Out, I loved Us, and I love what both those films have to say. And he's a new voice in cinema, and I think Jordan Peele, he's brilliant.
Definitely, I agree as well, man. Now, honestly, I go to movies every time something new drops. Like, I saw the Hobbs and Shaw, which was great. You got to check that out.
Okay.
Ready or Not was very interesting, like that. It's kind of horror but suspenseful, you know. So it's an interesting film. That Angel Has Fallen, you know, that's always great.
Gerard Butler. I saw the first one, Olympus Has Fallen, which Antoine Fuqua directed. I didn't see London Has Fallen. I didn't see that one, but I heard Angel Has Fallen was really good.
Yeah, it was really good. Like the action, you know, it was your action. I love it. Yeah, man. So I think you know, you definitely should check out those films that's in the theater. I mean, it just kind of helps you, you know, again, you know, with the knowledge that you can obtain from a film, you know, especially the new one that the box office hits.
I just
looked at Hobbs and Shaw grossed $700 million so far. You know, they're doing something right.
The last thing I probably watched as far as like a show was the director I mentioned before, Nicholas Refn. He did Drive with Ryan Gosling. So he had a show recently with Miles Teller called Too Old to Die Young. And that was on Amazon Prime. And that was amazing.
Yeah,
that was kind of like No Country for Old Men kind of vibe. It was a slow burn murder mystery cop thriller out in the desert. But the way he shoots his movies and his TV shows is just next level. The colors, the what's out of focus, what's in focus. That was like, you know, like when I see a visionary, then that's when I go and pay attention. And as far as what I'm looking forward to, Bad Boys for Life. You know, Michael Bay's not directing this one. I saw the trailer, I loved it. That's like my favorite franchise, so I can't wait for that in January. Star Wars, Rise of Skywalker, big Star Wars guy, that comes out in December. Six Underground, the new Michael Bay movie for Netflix with Ryan Reynolds and the same writers as Deadpool. Looking forward to that. And then as far as like, you know, highbrow stuff, gotta love Chris Nolan, gotta love Denis Villeneuve. So Tenet, Chris Nolan's new movie. And then Dune, they're remaking Dune. Denis Villeneuve is directing that. That's coming out, I think, next November.
What do you think of Martin Scorsese?
He's a legend. He's one of the best.
Yeah, because you didn't mention him that one time.
No, he's great. Yeah. I mean, he's great. I mean, he's, you know, got The Irishman coming out. They're doing the de-aging technology. You know, I wouldn't say he's one of my favorites as far as, like, the subject matter he chooses.
Okay.
But I like his visual style. You know, to me, it always comes back to the visuals catch my eye. He's one of those guys who's always, even at his age, he's always pushing the technology. You know, all these guys like Tarantino and P.T. Anderson and Nolan are like, oh, film, 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 film. Scorsese was like, no, I'll do a digital camera. I'll shoot Hugo on digital. You know, I'll work with digital. You know, you got guys like Ridley switching to digital when he did Prometheus, or Michael Bay switching to digital when he did Transformers 3. You know, and Fincher and, of course, Michael Mann were some of the first to pioneer digital with Heat and Zodiac and Insider and things like that. And, you know, so for me, you know, digital is the way to go. You know, you can shoot more takes, and the colors are really just getting as vibrant and as crisp as film is. But film is beautiful, too. You know, and you mentioned actors I want to work with. For me, since I'm such a visual person, I think about cinematographers I want to work with. That's what gets me up in the morning.
Okay.
You know, when I think about, Anthony Don Mantle. Mm. He's probably my number one. He works with Danny Boyle a lot. Mm-hmm. He also shot Rush and In the Heart of the Sea with Ron Howard.
Okay.
I just love his style. Dan Mindell, mm-hmm. who used to work with Tony Scott a lot, works with J.J. Abrams a lot. Mm-hmm. Did Mission Impossible 3. He's doing the Star Wars films with him now. Mm-hmm. Roger Deakins, of course, Blade mm-hmm. Runner and things like that. He's a legend. Finally won his Oscar for that mm-hmm. a couple years ago. Claudio Miranda mm-hmm. works with Joe Kaczynski a lot. Worked mm-hmm. with Fincher on Benjamin Button.
Yeah.
Want to work with him. Actually had a conversation with him on Facebook once. Really nice, nice. Guy. So I want to work with Claudio. He's about to do the new Top Gun. So many cinematographers. Adam Arkapaw. You know, they're my favorite person to talk to on right. set. Because I'm such a camera nerd. I want to learn about the filters and the lenses.
Right, right.
And the same. Lighting and all that stuff. So to me, I'm just hanging out with the DP all day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There you go. All right. I had another question for you. It just slipped my mind. What was that? Give me one second. Ah, shit. Damn. It was regarding what you were saying about the film. About your time in L.A. So now that you're in L.A.,
yes.
you know, you have all this history. You had your ups and downs in the film industry, but you learned a lot through, you know, watching other people's work and working with other people. What is the grind like for you now? You know, like, are you getting jobs back to back, or is it a struggle for you to where you got to do other things to maintain while this pops off? Like, how are you maintaining that aspect of your grind?
Well, like I said, I'm trying to balance feature film with commercials. Mm-hmm. So obviously, as we know, getting a film financed is a lot of work. Right. So that's a work in progress, mm-hmm. right? Commercials, I try to do one every other month. Mm-hmm. So I've got something coming up with Toyota soon. Mm-hmm. And so...
congrats on that.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And so I'm working on that. I just did something with Mercury Insurance. Mm-hmm. And so... that sort of like keeps the bills paid. And then in between that, I do photography.
Okay.
So I'm working with models and shooting with them. And that's just, you know, a little money here and there and just mm-hmm. experience. And then we're going to use some of that towards the clothing line, mm-hmm. which also keeps me busy drawing these sketches and giving them ideas back and forth and things like that. And we did receive some, you know, a little bit of investment money for that. Mm-hmm. So that also helps as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty much what I wanted to get to. Because everybody I speak with, a lot of them got a lot of dreams, aspirations, and goals, you know, but when it's just, you know, a work in progress, and it's like how you maintain it, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. You can't be out here starving. I mean, there's people that, you know, made it from living out their car. I mean, look at Stallone. He wrote Rocky in his car, you know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? And look at him now, you know? So that's why I was asking, like, yeah, like, how are you earning from this? Right. How are you generating revenue? But it sounds like, you know, you're diversifying your bonds and staying active. So that's good, man.
That's something I noticed about LA since I've been out here because, you know, I mean, I have some people out here that I already knew that I consider friends and I hang out with and stuff. Mm. But to make new friends out here, I found, I don't know if you found this, it can be tough.
Absolutely.
Because everyone is just so busy.
Yeah.
You know, everyone has their 9-to-5 job, mm-hmm. you know, if you gotta pay the bills. Mm-hmm. And then you got your hustle, mm-hmm. right? You got rappers trying to record songs. You got, you know, actresses auditioning for things. You know, everybody has their hustle. And then it's like, if you're not helping me make money or you're not helping me in my industry, I don't got time for you.
That's a fact.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And if they don't do that, they're sleeping. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of hard to kind of like, you know, you have to kind of prove yourself to certain people like, no, I'm not just trying to kick it. I'm also, I know somebody who can help you.
Right.
You know, and you feel like you're being, you know, valued for what you can offer instead of your actual friendship. Mm. And that's something I've kind of had to adjust to. It's not like that in New York. Obviously, people have their hustle and their grind in New York, mm-hmm. but people also make the time to just chill with their friends. But I think once people make the decision to move out here, they're like, I got to make it.
Anyway, this is more of a business decision. Coming to LA is got to be a business decision.
There's no time
unless you made it somewhere else, you know.
Yeah.
But coming here is a business decision, man, because LA can chew you up and spit mm-hmm. you out if you can't afford to be here.
Yep.
That's just facts, man. But, you know, let the people know where they can hire you for your film work or even submit scripts to you or just work with you in general.
Oh, you can holler me on social media. I'm on Instagram at A Michael Ray Film. And I'm on Twitter at Michael Ray Films.
There it is, man. Well, Michael Ray, I want to thank you for coming on, man. I'm glad we finally got this going. And I wish you much success. You know, you sound very driven. Sounds like you did extreme amount of homework throughout the years, you know, with honing in on your craft and learning from the greats and making that everything you've done from them your own. And, you know, you're destined for greatness, my brother. And I wish you much success. And I look forward to work with you in the near future, man.
Thank you, man.
This has been another episode of Sleepers for Billionaires, the podcast. I am your host, Johnny Vegas. the Michael Ray. Get a load of him right now, man. He's looking at a living legend coming to fruition, man. He's going to get a star in the Walk of Fame. I said it first. Stay tuned for more episodes to come. Thank you for watching. And we out.